news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. The text line is there for you, 251-343-0106. So far, maybe it's too soon, but no texts about Mr. Pancake in Ohio with the hamsters in his pants. we're kind of surprised we're not getting a larger reaction.
Well, you said it. I think people need to take time to digest that story.
Too big a story
right.
for us to expect them to jump right on the text line.
I'm fairly creative. You guys are probably more creative, a lot of you, but I could never in my life come up with that kind of story.
No.
Matthew Pancake stuffing hamsters down his leopard print onesie. It's quite the story. I remember they had there was a show. My dad was actually in a couple episodes called America's Dumbest Criminals, and they would recreate. You know, they'd read police reports and all that, and then they'd recreate these just absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Crimes. That would fit perfectly on America's Dumbest Criminals.
Yeah, your dad probably would decline the opportunity to play Mr. Pancake.
So it's not a very big break.
Go on with his
Matthew
life.
Pancake. Yeah. 8:07, it's a Tuesday, and a lot to get into with Quinn Hillier. With the Washington Examiner, you can read his work also at his self-named website, quinnhillier.com. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys.
So, I think... although everyone knew the potential was there for an assassination attempt against former President Trump, it's still so shocking and surprising when something like what happened on Saturday in Butler, Pennsylvania, does happen. And even more, I mean, there's so many things to discuss regarding the failure of the Secret Service to secure a roof 130 yards away from the former president and leading presidential contender. And then the fact that just the way he had his head positioned when those shots rang out, that it clipped his ear and then resulted in what will likely be one of the most iconic photos of a president ever. I mean, Quinn, what were your first thoughts after this news broke on Saturday?
Well, pretty much what everybody else thought. Horror that this came so close. Glad, obviously, that it did not succeed. Absolute, just heart-rending feeling for the spectator that was killed and the other two that were injured. And then, you start asking questions. You do not want to jump to conclusions about... who did it, motives. You don't want to jump to conclusions about the Secret Service, et cetera, but you do have to start asking very serious and sober questions. And my thought was, just like everybody else, how was that roof unsecured?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you just start going through all of that, but I had this distinct feeling that people were going to overreact and that we needed to calm down. And I had actually written that 9 days before. And this is going to sound like a commercial, but in the last 5 years, I've written two columns that specifically warned of impending political violence. One was on January 5th, 2021, saying that things were out of hand and the next day could be ugly and people needed to back off. I think I was right. The other was with James Carville. I reached out. I've never done anything with James Carville, the Democratic consultant, but we co-wrote a piece that ran on July 4th basically the point of it was cool the temperature, and the last two paragraphs specifically warned about political violence. I felt something coming, and I certainly didn't think it would be this, but everybody needs to cool the temperature down.
So 9 days before this happened, you said you were worried about the threat of political violence because of the temperature in the room, but you say to not jump to any conclusions after this, that maybe it was politically motivated?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, this kid... was a registered Republican and a classmate described him as apolitical. Others described him as consistently conservative. There is absolutely zero evidence that this was some lefty, other than that he did what a lot of people did in the immediate aftermath of the January 6th Capitol riot. He gave a whopping $15 to a Democratic voter registration group. That was nearly 4 years ago, when he was 16 years old. But then, subsequently, he registered Republican. So we don't know, and we need to not jump to conclusions, other than that this is a horrible tragedy, and we need to all watch what we do and how we speak.
Yeah, well, Biden's not doing that. I'm glad the story happened on a Saturday night, because Sunday I was able to kind of slow things down and examine the story and examine corners of the story. And I was thinking to myself, and Dalton and I were in contact with each other, just kind of talking things through. And I thought, where is the main talking point here? And I settled after watching some of the Sunday shows and seeing other interviews and hearing other reporters. The talking point was the security, mm-hmm. or the incredible lack of security. What in the world?
Yeah. And so many people in the know, former Secret Service agents, former snipers, people who have done that kind of work in their lifetime, are saying it's either one of two things, Quinn, and I don't think they're jumping to conclusions. They're saying this is either one of two things: a serious and almost unbelievable lapse in security, or malice, and that something like this was allowed to happen.
Then, and it is wildly irresponsible to say the latter without a shred of proof. Wildly irresponsible. Look, the Secret Service is actually undermanned, and the Secret Service is not well led right now. The odds are, they have a. You're in a place like that, you've got a heck of a lot of different moving parts, and the odds are that they weren't up to it. They did something, or had a lack of doing something that showed gross incompetence. But to suggest malice is wildly irresponsible, unless and until you have proof.
But, it's not a stretch to say that the federal government isn't capable of that, right?
Yes, it is. It is so irresponsible to say that without proof that it boggles my mind. People need to wait for the facts, stick to facts, stop conspiracy theories, stop the wild speculation. Look, nobody, and you can go back 20 years, nobody has been in print more often than me criticizing the Justice Department, et cetera, but there's a difference between being, over-politicized and being murderous. And to say the latter is just wrong.
Talking with Quinn Hilliard, quinnhilliard.com, The Washington Examiner. What do you think about, and I know both sides, the rhetoric gets heated. There have been things said on both sides. But this shooter, 20 years old, when Trump went into office, he would have been 12, maybe 13. So pretty much his entire teenage years, he's heard the national media demonize Donald Trump. And he's seen things like we've all seen, the comparisons to Hitler, the end of democracy. He wants to do this. He wants to do that. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that kind of rhetoric, when you've heard it for half of your life about this one man being the most evil person in the world, that something like this would happen.
I have a column out that says that again, this is bunk. What is not bunk is that the demonization by both sides of both sides had raised the temperature so much that I was worried, which is why I reached out to James Carville to try to calm things down. But I can cite chapter and verse and have cited chapter and verse of so many things that were so violent said about the other side that that it's just, again, it's irresponsible to start pointing fingers and don't get ahead of the facts. And I would remind you, when liberal media and liberal politicians tried to blame Sarah Palin's map with actual, crosshairs of a rifle on 20 different congressional districts, including that of Gabby Giffords of Arizona, and then Gabby Giffords was shot, and they immediately said, oh, it's Sarah Palin's fault, and conservatives were right to say, well, that while it really was something that Palin, it was imagery she should not have used, they were right to say that's not a fair, it's not fair to blame Sarah Palin for one loony person doing the shooting. Well, you can't say that and turn around and clutch your pearls and have the vapors and say, oh, well, but it's not fair for somebody to use the word bullseye now, which is a very common, common metaphorical phrase. Actually, you shouldn't use the crosshairs. You shouldn't use the bullseye. But you can't have it both ways. Everybody needs to watch out, calm down, and wait for the facts.
Yes, we need to wait for the official report from the New York Times before we make sweeping.
No, not official report from the New York Times. There is still a difference between facts and speculation. It is a fact that this kid's last name was Crooks. It is a fact that he had a rifle on the roof. It is a fact that he was shot and killed. It is a fact that a spectator was killed. But speculating about his motives, we can wait for, and it's not the New York Times that is the arbiter of facts. A fact is a fact.
Well, the fact is this, too. President Biden, in fighting for his life, for his job, he has become just so combatant, and he is, aside from his brief mumbled messages over the weekend, he's right back at it, and he is keeping the temperature hot. If you heard any of his conversation with Lester Holt from NBC News yesterday, Holt was like just happy to get the guy out of the room. Like, let's end this thing.
Absolutely.
I don't get
absolutely
it.
Absolutely correct.
Okay. So explain that to me.
It's easy to explain. Joe Biden is not a good person, and Joe Biden is getting very close to being non compos mentos. He's not there yet, but he's intermittently not there, and he is acting despicably, and there is no excuse for it.
Okay.
Interesting day one at the RNC yesterday. Quite the cornucopia of speakers there. I mean, the Teamsters president.
Yeah.
And then the big announcement, J.D. Vance, the vice presidential nominee. You've written a column about Vance, and we'll discuss that when we get back. Does that sound all right, Quinn?
Yeah.
Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com. You can read his work here. You can also read it at the Washington Examiner. It's 8:20. Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:23.
The big announcement yesterday, day one of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, that the heavy favorite here these last couple weeks, Ohio, freshman Senator J.D. Vance, the selection for the Trump presidential ticket. And, of course, one of the main things that people have brought up have been Vance's past comments regarding Trump, especially back in 2015, 2016, when he was first running for office. Vance, he's talked about that, and just play this for you before we get into this discussion. Here's Vance on Bret Baier.
Yeah, well, I think the simple answer is you've got to respect the American people enough to just level with them. Look, I was wrong about Donald Trump. I didn't think he was going to be a good president, Bret. He was a great president, and it's one of the reasons why I'm working so hard to make sure he gets a second term. I think you should. When you're wrong about something, you should change your mind and be honest with people about that fact. And I actually think, again, whether this is running as his running mate or running and supporting him as United States Senator, Brett, I think it actually presents a real opportunity to talk to the American people, because a lot of people didn't think Trump was going to be a good president, and a lot of people were happy to be proven wrong. And I think it presents an opportunity for me to make the case to the American people that, look, we have two very different sets of results. 4 years of Joe Biden, 4 years of Donald Trump. We know the Trump record is one of success. The Biden record is one of failure. I came around to Donald Trump, and I think that a lot of Americans will do the exact same thing.
So Vance selected over Doug Burgum, Marco Rubio, and a host of other candidates. And Quinn, you've already written about this. Your thoughts on the selection?
I think it was a terrible selection on both political and policy grounds. I don't have time to get into all the policy grounds, and other than to say this guy has been in office less than 18 months and has not had a chance to prove himself, has not done anything legislatively that is of note. Politically, he does not actually have a good record. He ran in Ohio when the Ohio Republican governor was winning by 25 points and all the other statewide candidate Republicans were winning by 20 points, and he only won by 6 points. That shows he's not that good a vote getter. He actually turns off suburbia. He turns off the proverbial soccer moms. So he doesn't have, I mean, it was almost an embarrassing showing. He won by so little in such an overwhelmingly Republican state that year.
This could be his, this could be where he turns it around.
But why do you pick somebody who's so vastly underperformed everybody else, and who has only been in office less than 18 months? And before that, this is a guy who's pretending to be the voice of the working class, and yet he made his money by riding Peter Thiel's venture capital, sort of rapacious venture capital coattails. Everything about this man yells opportunist. Everything about him. And
When I read his book, everything that I read into the book that I took away from the book was not opportunist, but very authentic.
Oh, the book, very authentic, and then he gets into, he decides he wants to get into politics, and suddenly he switches 180, not just on Trump, but all sorts of things. When somebody makes that big a switch on so many things that fast, that spells opportunism to me. Look, I've always said I didn't think Sarah Palin was the right pick, but not because of who she was, but because she didn't have the right experience. I don't think this guy has the right experience. He certainly hasn't shown political chops, and he doesn't reach out to anybody. Trump's going to win Ohio anyway, but he doesn't reach out geographically. He doesn't reach out stylistically. He doesn't help bring back the suburbs that had turned against Donald Trump. He doesn't do something like Glenn Youngkin would and put a new state into play like Virginia. So I don't understand how he adds to the ticket.
Well, anytime you have the great trio of Mitt Romney, John Bolton, and Lindsey Graham despising a pick, I'm on board with it. And all three of them, although Graham changed his tune yesterday after pushing up until the last minute for one of the other candidates to be the VP pick, it seems to me like the people who have the most issue with this are the ones who want to keep spending money in Ukraine, Quinn.
Ukraine is a big issue, and he's on the wrong side of Ukraine, both morally and according to the polls, and he's demagogued it. Look, whatever you want to say about whether it's wise to spend our money there, to say that people supporting aid to Ukraine want to take away grandma's Social Security so a Ukrainian general can buy a yacht, that's demagoguery. It's sickening. You've got people dying over there who are innocent because of Putin's aggression, and there's absolutely no evidence that money is going to buy generals a yacht. In fact, it's not money at all. It's weapon systems.
If you want to
demagoguery, and it's sick.
And Quinn's article on J.D. Vance, very clear and concise, the way you feel, and they can read that at the Washington Examiner.
Yes.
All right, man. Thanks.
Quinn Hilliard, QuinnHilliard.com. By the way, J.D. Vance, the only veteran, Marine, who's on either ticket. I think that means a lot to people who want to see someone with some military service at least close to the high office.
Best-selling author. He's an excellent communicator, and I think over the next few months, people are going to get to know who he is, either like him a lot or have Quinn's opinion.
Right.
But we're going to get to know him, and then we can decide.
No doubt.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. What is going on, y'all? We'll get to some of your texts here in just a moment. You know about Breeze Airways, right? You've seen maybe, well, you've heard me talk about it. Also, I see those billboards on I-10 right there near Michigan Avenue. Let's go ahead and check out how quickly you're from Michigan Avenue to downtown. 8-10 minutes, depending on which way you go. You can go broad or you can go on the interstate. Breeze Airways making it very convenient for you in Baldwin County. You got these low fares, nonstops to Orlando right now. Low, low fares. Check out those fares at Breeze Airways, at flybreeze.com. That's where you go. FlyBreeze.com. So you don't want to drive to Orlando. You don't want to do that anyway. So you can ride on that seriously nice Airbus A220 made right here in Mobile. Lots of room for you to spread out. And again, Breeze Airways, thrilled to offer nonstop flights from Mobile International Airport near downtown. And you can get to your final destination just like that. If you're heading to Orlando, that's what's going to happen. You're at the theme parks before you know it. Book your nonstop flight today, again, at flybreeze.com, FlyBreeze.com. Get online and find those low fares. You'll love it. So flying Orlando, not just easy. It is now a breeze with Breeze Airways. It's 8:37. Dan and Dalton.
And, well, to say the least, a lot of comments on the text line regarding Quinn's appearance this morning. And you could jump in, 251-343-0106. And while I appreciate many of these comments, there's a lot that, well, I either can't read on the air or I won't be able to get into. Texter here says, to Quinn's point, JD doesn't have the experience. Yeah, okay, you know who has a lot of experience? Biden. An enthusiastic veteran millennial is the exact momentum Trump needs. And I think, well, I said it earlier, if Vance is like Mitt Romney's most hated member of the Senate,
you're in.
And if Lindsey Graham is fighting until the very last second to avoid having Vance put on the ticket, and if John Bolton, who, as Sean Sullivan always says, has never seen a war that he hasn't wanted to get America involved in, if John Bolton is against Vance being on the ticket, those three, then I think we're starting off at a good point. And I think that the reason, and maybe Trump would have picked Vance all the way along, but because he has, according to the polls, and I'm a lot more hesitant than I feel like even the Trump camp is right now to say this thing's going to be won in November, but I think he felt confident enough that he could put someone in that role who is young and someone he thinks, that Trump thinks, can kind of carry on his legacy. And this populist, protectionist kind of movement that Trump started back in 2016, bringing jobs back to the Rust Belt, which he and more
he
America, but he so eloquently
he lived it. Yeah, he so Vance. I don't know as much about his run in Ohio.
Well, and let me say so. Quinn and so many others are saying he's so severely underperformed in Ohio. Let's remember he was up against Tim Ryan, who was a 10-year congressman in Ohio for that open Senate seat. And Vance, I think because of his position on abortion and because of the Roe v. Wade decision, which had just been overturned by the Supreme Court, we all saw, remember it was supposed to be a red wave.
Oh, yeah.
There were a lot of races that were much closer than they should have been and a lot of losses for the Republicans because of that. And I think that played a major role. He still won by 6 points. He didn't maybe perform as well as the governor.
Yeah.
But it was a formidable opponent he was facing there in Ohio.
And he was a newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he just got called up to the big leagues. You want him to wipe everybody out? I got to know Vance by reading the book, and then by he would go on many shows to be interviewed to talk about the book, to talk about being raised in that poverty of Ohio, West Virginia area, corner of the of the Appalachia. And so that's how I got to know him. Then he was on 60 Minutes. He was everywhere. And he came across as a very thoughtful, genuine person. And you talk about somebody who came from nothing, ends up in the Marines. That's his own decision. And then Ohio State, then Yale Law School. Who's the other guy on the Republican side that's really got my fascination?
Vivek
Ramaswamy.
And they're actually so close that, well, I know Vance has a child named Vivek.
That's amazing.
I'm going to assume, which I know you're not supposed to assume, right, things, but I'm going to assume his close relationship with Vivek
is why
he named one of his children Vivek.
You would think, because it's not Timmy. So so they were in law school together, which I didn't know. Ramaswamy has always caught my attention just because of his incredible intelligence, if nothing else, and his composure when debating or speaking, his memory. So these guys were boys back at Yale Law School. Mm-hmm. And close enough to the point where he's named a child after.
And let's not forget, Vance had some things to say about Trump early on.
Sure.
And the one thing that everyone's pointing to where he said, they're just trotting out this America's Hitler. These were in private messages with his former roommate, who mm-hmm. ended up becoming a Democrat congressman. And in those messages, just like we were all doing in 2015 and 2016 in private correspondence with our friends and family, I don't know about this Trump guy. He could either be, and this is what Vance said. Actually, let me pull up the exact quote. He said, "I go back and forth between thinking Trump is a cynical blank hole."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was FEC approved. "Like Nixon, who wouldn't be that bad and might even prove useful, or that he's America's Hitler. How's that for discouraging?" This McLaurin, Democrat, showed his private correspondence with Vance, which I just can't believe someone would be that big of a dirtbag, but there you go. Everyone had an opinion on Trump coming in. So many politicians who have gone out and won races and answered these exact same questions that Vance has had to answer were against Trump when he first came in. I think we all were wondering, is this New York con man really in it for the right reasons?
I agree.
Or is he pulling the wool?
Right.
Some people still believe that Trump, he walks out there and puts his own life into his hands, as we saw this weekend. He doesn't have to be out there doing that. As Conor McGregor, the UFC fighter, said, he should be out sailing on a yacht in the Mediterranean playing his golf courses. Trump is in this for a reason, and I tend to think those reasons are that he wants to make America a safe place, a happy place, a thriving place for American citizens. Many of those who were in the Rust Belt, when's the last time you've seen rural Pennsylvania, rural Ohio, take a look at Detroit. So many of these once thriving towns with mills and all kinds of great industrialization have just died and gone away and have turned to fentanyl and opioids
yes.
and crime, because all of these jobs, thanks to so many of our elite politicians who have their hands in every pot internationally, are sending these jobs overseas where these things can be made for nickels on the dollar, so often using slave labor or something equivalent to slave mm-hmm. labor. Vance spoke so eloquently about what that area of America looks like that it was used as the playbook for these elites who have no idea what's going on. That's what they use to try to figure out why someone would want to vote for Trump. And to pretend that Vance and all these other people just flip-flop because they're looking for a better role in some administration, or because they want to become rich and pull cons just like the great con man Donald Trump is doing, is to totally discount everything that has happened since 2016. When you see how crooked the national media has portrayed, how they've created fiction and are selling it to the American people that Trump is the worst person in the world. COVID, so many of us, like I'll say, and if you want to use the word radicalized, sure, I don't think it's very radical because so many Americans have gone down this exact same route that I have. I still had trust in America's institutions mm-hmm. leading into COVID. Even though I knew that they were going after Trump as hard as they were, you had the Russia collusion lies. They were trying to take him out of office the entire time. Once COVID happened and some real reporting began being done by oftentimes just regular citizens because you couldn't get it from the mainstream media, we all started to see they are screwing us, and they're screwing us for their own ends in so many different cases. We trusted these institutions, and they have completely let us down. When Vance made those comments on Trump, he was younger than I am right now.
Yeah.
You're allowed to change your mind. You're allowed to let current events change the way you feel about certain things. I don't think it's that big of a deal that he was once anti-Trump.
No.
A lot of people were anti-Trump.
A lot of people were, for sure. And I think it's it distinguishes him to come out and say it. And it, well, he got caught with it, but he's like, yeah. But he's a best-selling author, so he's a really good communicator. I think he is a very much an authentic person. I think in the next 3 months, here's our chance. Here's our chance to learn who this guy is. And if he's a con man, we'll probably figure it out. But look at all of the established Republicans. None of them were waving the Trump flag back when he entered the race. He was taking them all out one by one like a sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And on national stages, people were uncomfortable with all that, right? What is this guy going to do when he gets into office? Well, he did a lot of good. This is Vance yesterday about receiving that phone call. Can we play this real
quick? Play it.
This is Vance talking about getting the call from Trump. And tell me if this sounds like a snide opportunist.
When the president called me today to actually formally offer me to become, you know, the vice presidential nominee, which just sounds crazy, my 7-year-old son was sort of making noise in the background. You know, I'm getting so embarrassed. It's like, oh, my God, Donald Trump's asking me to be his vice president.
So the phone rings, he calls you, and you're like, okay, this is the call or maybe not the call.
Or maybe it's a bad call, right? It's the call. Who knows whether it's good or bad. But then he actually has me put my 7-year-old son on the phone. You think about this. Everything that's happened, the guy just got shot at a couple of days ago, and he takes the time to talk to my 7-year-old. It's a moment I'll never forget.
All right. And what did he actually say?
You know, he just said, look, I think we've got to go save this country. I think you're the guy who can help me in the best way. You can help me govern. You can help me win. You can help me in some of these Midwestern states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and so forth. And he said, rightfully, that we have been very, very close for a long time, but especially since I endorsed you in 2022. And I would not have won that race without Donald Trump's endorsement. And the president's trust then and his partnership since then has been something I value a great deal.
Would you trust Lindsey Graham over that guy?
No.
I wouldn't.
No.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen these same politicians, and so many of the Democrats have now become neocons, and we've seen so many. I mean, I don't have to say it. I've said it already twice. If Mitt Romney, John Bolton, and Lindsey Graham are against you, I'm probably – now, it doesn't mean I fully endorse every single view, but I'm probably more in line with the person that they despise than the person that they want to become vice president. And don't forget what I've been saying this whole time. We saw the attempt on Trump's life this weekend. We've seen the criminal charges sometimes, many times, levied out of thin air, right? And they want Trump out of office. And I'm not saying that the assassination attempt was put on by somebody other than the shooter who showed up that day to shoot him, although I think that I'd love to see this investigation actually be a real investigation.
What does Robert Kennedy Jr. think?
Well, I think he's glad he finally got Secret Service after Trump called for it yesterday and Biden finally came around to it. But I forgot where I was going with that point.
Sorry about that.
So the shooter that showed up there, our comments on that and Quinn saying it's completely wrong to assume anything here. And then he says, I was just talking 9 days ago with James Carville about how the political rhetoric is too high. So yes, political rhetoric was likely. If this was just this shooter who showed up to shoot that day, shoot the president, I would say it's a fairly easy conclusion to come to that political rhetoric and them calling Trump the worst person in the world was, for some reason, his hatred of Trump was why he got up there and did that. And like this texter said here, if Quinn has the inability to publicly acknowledge the government's ability to deceive us, and when I was quoting kind of Eric Prince, the Florida Congressman Corey Mills, so many people who have direct experience in either Secret Service or security work or had been snipers on some team somewhere, and they are all pretty much saying this was one of two things. It was either unbelievable, and everyone uses the word unbelievable. This was either truly unbelievable incompetence mm-hmm. from the Secret Service, or there was intent to allow it to happen. Those are the only two options. And for Quinn to completely discount the chance that there were darker forces at play here in this assassination attempt over the weekend is to completely discount all of the reporting that has been done on past government attempts to take out, you know, leaders internationally, color revolutions, but also our own internal politicians.
Guys named Kennedy.
Texter said, if Quinn has the inability to publicly acknowledge the government's ability to deceive us, there's no point in me listening when he comes on. I want to hear opinions that differ from my own. Steel sharpens steel, but he's living in a hole.
Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the worst national anthem you've ever heard in your life.
Oh, boy.
That, oh, wow. Really, no words. That's on the way. 8:54, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings, and Joel is on the line. Well, he was on the line in Summerdale. But he's not now.
How do you know?
I just gave you audio proof. Listen, okay. So, also, that didn't feel good to my ears, but the national anthem last night at the Home Run Derby.
Oh, boy.
Did not feel good to anybody's ears. And Ingrid Anders.
Andrus.
And
I think I've heard some songs from her. I think she's an all right.
Well, they must auto-tune the heck out of her.
Why you say that?
Because of what I heard last night. Actually, you played it for me this morning, and I don't know what examples, what clips we can play. But in the end, she starts to really try to – she's horrible and then tries to get fancy at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And that
she
is,
doubled down.
That's the death nail right there.
Let's see how much of this we can take. This was before the Home Run Derby in Arlington last night. Maybe it was the – maybe it's just that arena's not suitable for this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Let's see here. Where are you at, Ingrid?
By the twilight's last gleaming.
So far.
Ooh, it's broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight.
There's more.
O'er the ramparts we watch were so gallantly streaming.
I think this is when she turns it on right here. Oh, just tell me when you can't.
The
bombs are bursting in air behind her.
Yeah.
So they accompanied this voice.
Ooh, all right. I don't think I can take anymore.
The crowd is like, what's... And she's still performing. Okay.
Well, you have to. You can't stop.
She's doing this like this breathless, look at me.
Oh, man.
Oh. What?
Oh. In the home of the brave.
Oh, man.
You talk about a golf applause after that. You know, like, okay.
I feel bad.
It's a little bit, you know, it reminds me of is some of the things you're going to be going through in the audience of your young girls growing up.
Going to be.
Well, you have, I guess. I take that to mean you have.
No, mine's seeing...
Well, what I'm saying, you know, you're going to see some awful performances,
yeah,
and you're going to have to sit, grin, and bear it, and applaud these kids who are considered. He's an up and comer now, Johnny. Wait till you hear Johnny play the piano.
Yeah.
Wait till Maureen sings for you. She'll knock your socks off. That young lady is a professional, and not a third grader that'll attack your eardrums.
There's two things that I mean: the risk reward of getting up and doing it as a celebrity or as a just a musician. There's two things, and both involve baseball fields that you should really think long and hard about before you go out and do it, and that is singing the national anthem or throwing out the first pitch.
Yeah.
Because we as a country, there's no one we crucify more than someone who has a terrible pitch from the mound,
mm-hmm,
or can't handle the national anthem, which is a very difficult song to sing.
Well, we've never known any more clear evidence of that than right there.
Well, I'd prefer to hear Luke Combs singing. I think he does a pretty good job. But, you know, that put her right there with Fergie at the NBA All-Star game that one year. And then, of course... Roseanne.
Yeah.
And I forget where she sang it, but...
San Diego.
It's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. And why did I remember that Roseanne sang it in San Diego? And I don't remember what was for dinner last night. Okay. 8:59, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings, and Jeff Poore's on the way.